Survivor Specialist John and McKenna are back, and this time we are going into our new series, The First Juror's Impact. Were they bitter? Were they better for the game? And for this series, we are joined by Kyle of the Matt Chat, not Tagless Matt Chat, but the other Matt Chat. He will be joining us throughout the series, but hopefully we'll be able to get a few guests here and there popping on for some episodes. But Kyle will remain with us throughout the whole thing. And we are ready to discuss a topic that John and I had talked about on the rewind when Dee got voted out and the first member of the jury, how we think she is a good juror representation for 50. And that got us thinking, wait, what about the rest of the seasons? How were these first jurors impacting their seasons? So we're going to go at 5 season clips. It's kind of partnering with Phil and Once Upon an Island with their season, going through their seasons with the winning games, because the first juror does impact that winning game potentially. So I'm excited to dive into everything. And we're going to go and start with Borneo. And that is Greg. Greg is our first ever first juror.
He sure is. And it's so interesting when you look at the impact of a first juror. Throughout the Survivor community, I mean, this role has been known as the Mayor of Ponderosa for most Survivor super fans. This is how we kind of refer to this first juror. And for those of you who don't know, like, it's really just referring to the fact that, like, this is the person who really does shape the way the jury comes. And what you'll notice throughout this series as we start talking about all these jurors is, because this person is the one who is there the longest, has the most interaction with all the jurors that follow them, they do kind of set a tone for how a jury is going to react. I think we really see that evidenced in next week's episode when we start getting into a couple of other seasons that have a bit more maybe bitter juries than what we see in these early seasons. But here, it's really fascinating because Greg is such a character in Borneo. Greg is really shown as this kind of fun-loving guy out there for the adventure. So how does that impact the results of Borneo?
Yeah, I mean, this is somebody who takes the game not the most seriously, at least from what he projects. Like, I do think that he appreciates the game and enjoyed the experience, but what he put on to the audience and in his confessionals was, you know, a young kid who's just out there. He's fake crying on his way out, right? He's doing the coconut phone. So he's someone who's certainly out there to have fun, not take things too seriously. And that reflects in his jury question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, his jury question is perceived to kind of be one of the most throwaway questions we get in that final tribal council of Borneo, right? But pick a number between 1 and 10. And it is a question that arguably didn't really have much impact on the results of the season at all, because Greg kind of been on record that Greg kind of had his mind set up going into that final tribal council who he was going to vote for. But I think what it really does go to show is it does show Greg as this character. And I think that's what's really important about this last question. Because he, if anything, this question really kind of asks like the conviction of the players at the final tribal council. And I know it seems like a little cheesy to say that, but having people pick a number between 1 and 10 really can dictate how a person is approaching the game. Because you can have like the easy thing of, okay, do you play the odds? Do you pick the number that's immediately after a low number that said, immediately below a high number that said? Do you try to split the difference if you're going first and say like 5 or 6? There's a lot of mental gymnastics you can play with this question depending on how you want people to answer. And I think that's what's make it so fascinating for Greg, who, if we really look at it, might have had the best grasp on the game on the entire Pagong tribe.
Aside from maybe Jenna, but yes. this question from Greg also really could throw off the contestants too, because they're expecting to get a question about their game. And then he just goes, basically, pick a number between 1 and 10. And it's like, wait, you don't want to hear anything that I have to say? Yes, he's second to last, so he's heard a lot of what they've had to say. But it's just a jarring thing to then get thrown into Sue's speech. Like, he was there to be this kind of this character with how he approaches the game. And then also he's not necessarily taking his questioning too seriously because he's throwing them off their game on top of it with being, I don't know, 1 through 10.
I think that this set a tone for the series in a couple of ways, because for one, if he is just asking you pick a number 1 through 10, that says anybody can ask anything they want and base their vote off of anything they want, right? It's like, it doesn't have to be about the game. And Greg is someone who is an individualist, right? He's going to do things like his way, and he doesn't really care about like how the show feels about it, right? Like, I don't know how many people cared about that in season one. Nowadays, I think things are a little bit more meta. But back then, he was a great first juror because he was going to do what he wanted, and that would set the tone. But if he had his mind made up already, that also tells you something else. That means if you're on the jury, you're allowed to have your mind made up, because the point of a real jury is to like be impartial, look at the facts, right? Deliberate, come to unanimous decision. You don't have to do any of that in Survivor. You can have your mind made up from the second you walk in there or the second you get voted out.
It's honestly maybe one of the issues with using the name juror, their jury, for this panel that really decides who wins the game. Yes, I know it's in our Survivor vernacular now, but it doesn't really have this real world parallel that we kind of associate, because the jury is supposed to evaluate evidence and then come to a unanimous decision. But Survivor isn't like that. We go back to Boring, right? It's a split jury with a 4-3 vote for Rich to win the game. And we see that a lot in these early seasons that we're discussing this week. And I think you made a really good point, Kyle. This does really set the tone for how the show is going to be played moving forward. And I know we talk a lot about Sue Hawk's final tribal council speech as kind of like a tone setter. We talk about Rich winning Borneo as a tone setter for the series. But really, the way that Greg approaches the jury, the way that he comes up with this question is like, okay, this is kind of putting evidence on the fact that the jury's already making up their mind and deciding how you've played the game prior to this point. And it is hard to dictate how they will vote in this final tribal council just by giving a speech at the end of the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Greg is also riddled with contradictions throughout Borneo. So this is all just during his vote out episode. He says something along the lines of like, the game is interesting. You make friends and alliances and have to cut them loose. But then right before tribal council happens, he says, if people are fear and self-preservation motivated, they will band together and form alliances. This is the worst type of game I could imagine. Now, is it the worst type of game he could imagine because he is being voted out this episode? Or what? Because he was one of these people that Kelly called a chameleon of the game, is able to adapt to his surroundings. And he was able to, you know, make inroads with certain people, but that was actually his downfall. And he was voted out here as the first juror. But now, if he is riddled with all these contradictions, how does that help you if he's the person being the first juror and impacting, being like, I think this, oh wait, maybe you swayed me, oh wait, this happened, oh wait, that happened. So I don't know if he's a good first juror because he's like, it's a game, we're good. But at the same time, I don't know. He's just like up in the air a lot too.
I don't know if he knew exactly how he felt on the game. My thought was that he was perhaps a little bit upset that he got outplayed or that he wasn't the first person to come up with this alliance, and he didn't have one. So he's like, this is a terrible type of game, but then secretly deep down that's why he votes for Richard, because he respects that kind of gameplay. What I also think making him the first juror sets a tone for the series as well, because I don't know what people were thinking when they watched the show, but in a show like Survivor, you hear people talk about it now sometimes on the show, like, we want the best people to get to the end, or like, we want, you know, someone who represents surviving. Like, Richard finds Greg to be a huge threat, right? He's charismatic. He's good at challenges. He's good in the wild. He's social. That makes him a threat to win. Now, back in the day, maybe you're like, oh, he's so good at this, I want him to get further, right? Or as an audience, right, I would let him get further. But Richard is like, I'm making him the first juror. He can't get any further because he is so good at this. And nowadays, you don't think twice about that. But I think back in the day, that could have set a huge tone. Like, the more charismatic you are, the better at challenges right away, that is what is going to make you the biggest threat.
Now, in a lot of seasons, the merge boot is the first juror. So let's talk about that and see what Gretchen would have impacted Final Tribal Council had she been the first juror, because she was voted out here at the merge. Do we think she votes for Rich in respect for his game, his survival instincts, because that was something that she was big on? Or do you think Kelly might have swayed her because, you know, Kelly was trying to get in with the Pagong members and things of that nature?
I think what it really comes down to is this idea that the fascinating thing about this first year, if it is the merge in these early seasons, obviously it's not the merge boot in these seasons because they want an odd number of jurors for a final two. That's why it starts at nine. But I think the interesting thing is, if you have the merge boot become that first juror, the question becomes, how much of they know the people sitting at the end? Because in this case, right, it's a Pagongi. The phrase comes from Borneo because of how the post-merge goes down, where all the Pagongs go subsequently, and then the Toggies are left there at the end. Gretchen wouldn't have had enough time to really get to know any of these people, but I think the way that she really approached the game, like, she did seem like the type of person who would respect the gameplay of it. And I think the difference between her and Greg as that first juror isn't very different. Granted, she's not going to be asking, hey, remember 1 and 10? I don't think. I think she would have actually asked a very, like, game-relevant question to have them to sway the jury no matter which way she was going. But I believe that she would have, again, put that emphasis on the game aspect that Greg does, because I think that is the most important thing that we see out of Greg here. Despite the fact that we do have these contradictory comments about, oh, it's kind of gross that they have this alliance, I agree with Kyle. I think Greg's already thinking this way in this game. He understands that social dynamic is kind of, and social strategic dynamic is what is needed to win this game in its infancy. And he respects that. And I think Gretchen was thinking a very similar way. And I think a way a lot of the Pagongs really approach this comes down to the fact that, hey, they figured it out before we did. You got to respect the game.
So do we think Greg is bitter or better for the game?
I think Greg is better for the game, for sure. You know, in his final words, like, he's not bitter. He talks on his way out like he's upset at all this gameplay, but really he's like, he understands, right? He gets the game. Like you said, McKenna, he may understand the game better than anybody on this cast, or as good as anybody. So I think that having someone like that as the first juror is great, because someone like Colleen was not about, like, alliances at all, right? Like, so having her, like, who knows what kind of tone that would set on the jury. So I think having Greg here is better for the game overall.
Agreed. I think better, for sure.
I don't think it's just better for, like, this season. It's better for Survivor as a whole. I think Greg being this first juror is the reason why we can still have Survivor 50 seasons later. It's wild to say, and I know, like, we've kind of mentioned, like, the Rich win and everything like that too, but I think Greg is very pivotal in that.
Yeah, well, he contributes to the Rich win. You know what I mean? He's exactly. like a deciding vote, really.
Basically, yeah.
30 seasons after this, Kelly Wigglesworth will say this is the question that determined if she won or lost the season.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
That this is the vote that changed it. Even though, like, you know, Jervis flipped his vote at Final Tribal Council because of Sue's speech and everything like yep. that.
Mm-hmm.
This is ultimately what she blames for losing the game. So if that's the case, then Greg really did set the tone for all of
survivors. He did. You asked Kelly Wigglesworth if she had her mind made up going into the Cambodia final tribal too.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. All right. Moving on to Outback. Our first juror is Alicia. And I was shocked while watching her vote out episode. She's barely in it. And as opposed to some of the other episodes, especially like Greg's, who we just talked about, he's in it throughout the entire thing. You have people talking about how, you know, he's a chameleon, he's funny, he's talking to Rich because maybe Rich likes him. And then Alicia, there's like nothing going on besides, oh, we're going to get voted out. That's sad.
Yeah, you take it, John, if you want. No, all right. Well, I think Alicia, I got to say, I don't know what direct impact she had on this jury. The one thing that she said that was of note and really poignant is that the Ogacores need to be nice to the Cooches mm-hmm. on their way out, right? If it is going to be this pagonging, then whoever treats them the best on their way out is going to carry a lot of favor. Now, the Cooches end up splitting their votes 2-2. Mm-hmm. But I think part of why Tina would get Elizabeth's vote and possibly Alicia's vote as well is because she just showed a lot of favor to the Cooches. It's like, we'll keep you around. We'll vote out Jerry. We'll vote out Amber. And I think that carries in their minds a lot. Like, the majority of the jury will be Coocha. So you really need to be cognizant of how you're treating them.
And I think Alicia also is she's very opinionated and will say what's on her mind, but she won't not let you say what's on yours and think about it and like take it in. I don't think she's like counting other people's opinions out. I feel like she welcomes other opinions, even though her opinions are also very strong.
Yeah, I agree. I think, like, despite the fact that she's very much shown in the show to kind of be this very emotional player, there is, like, some strategy behind the way she's approaching the game. And I think, like, those emotions, though, like, do come off as a little harsh sometimes in the edit. There's a very, like, softness to her emotions at the same time. Yes, mm-hmm. there are times where she can be a bit abrasive, and we especially see that in her second appearance. But I think what you really see here is someone who's trying to navigate the game a little differently. I think it's really interesting when we compare her to a Greg situation in Borneo, right? Like, Alicia probably would have voted for Wigglesworth in Borneo, right? Because of that comment that you said, Kyle, mm-hmm. right? Like, about the treating them nice as they were all going out. And I think that's really important to understand here. I think what also really impacts the way that Alicia approaches this jury comes down to who was voted out second.
Yeah.
In like right after her and becomes the second juror in Australian Outback, which is Jerry, right? And yes, there's probably some sourness from Jerry towards Colby, which is why she votes for Tina. She's also like, been working very closely with Tina the entire mm-hmm. game. And I think Alicia having that as her ability to really like look into Ogacore and like look into the dynamics of Ogacore and having Jerry there to kind of influence that really does change the way she approaches the game. And I think the big thing with Alicia is her desire for essentially putting a lot of emphasis on the social aspect of the game is what can kind of put Tina over the edge over mm-hmm. Colby, who is just winning every physical challenge out there.
Yeah, that's true. Some of the more, you know, dominant physical players don't get that love because they are just winning, where Tina has to put in the effort and the work to try and get the Kucha members on side, or to be able to work with them, say, oh, we'll throw you a bone, because she isn't safe. She's needing their votes potentially moving forward in the game, where Colby is safe and doesn't need that necessarily. So having, you know, Tina be that, you know, kind mom, warm personality lends Alicia to vote for her, because she doesn't like to be double crossed. If you double cross her, that's the end of the game. She doesn't appreciate the game savviness necessarily either, I feel like sometimes, but she's a real middling first juror for me, where like I can't tell if she's bitter or better for the game. I think she can go both ways.
She could definitely go both ways. Like, I think in this instance, I guess she was better, but like neutral, like you said. But if you get her on the, or let me say, the wrong person puts her on the jury, like we see, you know, Boston Rob, we've seen it in her to be a really bitter juror. So it just depends really on the way you send her home is going to be. that's what's going to depend on her reaction.
She was like gracefully kind of sent home of, you know, the writing's on the wall. You're just the first to get it happened to.
It's one of those instances where the Kuchas do see the writing on the wall, because they know what happened to the Pagongs a season prior.
Yeah.
And they seem to, right? And obviously, like, we do get two overcores at the end of the game. But I think what's very interesting about this is, like, Alicia puts an emphasis on, I said earlier, right? Like, Alicia puts this emphasis on the social game. And I think I am a massive Tina defender. I think Tina plays actually a phenomenal game. And I don't think we really put enough emphasis on how impactful Tina's win is to the history of Survivor, because we put so much emphasis on Rich's win, right? Where Rich kind of gets us the strategy side of it. Tina really brings out that the social side is so much more important than the physical side of the game. Right. Mm-hmm. Because on paper, Colby dominated the game physically, but you see these things where he lacks in the social game. Right. You see it a lot in the Jerry Boot episode. And I think that is really what is impacting Alicia's vote here. I think, like, she wants someone who is treating the dead men walking without, like, for lack of a better term, with grace and respect. And that's what Tina does the entire time. Tina's never out there gloating. Tina's never saying these things. Tina's never getting exasperated with people and physically showing it out at camp. And I think that's where the difference between her and Colby comes. And I think that's really what Alicia's respecting of Tina's game, is that she is both incredibly social and incredibly savvy, and is social enough to get a dominant challenge beast who has the opportunity to take a massive goat to the end, to take her to the end, and rewards her for it. And I think that is also so important to the legacy of Survivor, because that tells us you're never safe going to the end. And you, like, your decision of who you take is so important. And even then, if you take the wrong person, you might lose, even if you set the record for most immunity wins in a season.
I unfortunately have to bring this up, but if the merge boot, Varner, was the first juror, what would have changed with this season?
Oh boy, it would have been a lot louder, I think, on the jury. Even though Amber, or pardon me, Alicia is a big personality herself, like, just I think that Varner just would have tried to put his fingerprints all over this jury, right? He would have tried to dominate. That's from just my guess. But and then I wonder, does he vote for Tina or Colby? Like, I'm not sure.
I feel he probably is a vote for Tina. I think he does respect that aspect of the game more than the physical aspect of the game. Even back in Australia, I think he does really respect the strategic and social aspects of the game. But it's hard to tell, right? Because, again, this is someone who is kind of in contest with everything. It's kind of put into a rough spot at the merge because of
who thought up, who pushed him for the vote? Because they knew he had passed votes. Did Tina or Colby, were one of them more of the ringleaders for any of that? Because I know Kimmy spilled the beans.
Yeah, Kimmy did. I forget who she told exactly. But I think it could have been any of that felt like a whoever knew the information just said it.
I think that is something that would have influenced him. If like Tina was the one to say it, then he's voting for Colby or something like that.
I think there's also the fact that I think Tina does something more important in that vote than just that. She steps down so Keith can get immunity.
Yeah.
As the person with past votes.
To make sure Keith that Garner has to talk her into.
But still, right?
Like, yeah.
I think that is actually something that Varner would probably respect. That is a massive strategic move that is not emphasized enough in the annals of Survivor history.
Yeah, it's not. Because a move like that, I mean, Survivor really didn't know what to do with it at the time, right? It's like, wow, they're thinking about this stuff. Like, you can see Varner when Keith wins immunity, he's like, he kind of knows he's like screwed, right? Because they all
that's
know
their only other shot.
Yeah, we do know that Varner is like a devious player. Devious than anybody who's played this game. So I do wonder if he would vote for Tina if he knew. Whoever spilled the beans, right? Yeah. Whoever was the one, maybe he would respect that. But it's so hard to know with him. I really don't know.
I think one thing is he would ask the question, right? Like, I think that's what his jury question would be. I think he would have that self-conceited jury question about his own boot.
Probably.
as opposed to Alicia's jury question, which is like, what are you most proud of and least proud of, right? Like, I think that really goes to show the difference between like the way Alicia approached this game to someone like that. And I think it does seem weird because I think Alicia is much more remembered for her All-Stars appearance than she is for her Australian Outback appearance. So it is kind of weird to see her in this very, like, I think that question is one that kind of like a staple of Survivor questions in like some segments, right? Like, it's not maybe not the exact wording, but it is one of those things that's like, okay, tell me what you think about your game, because I know what you want us to think, but I want you to actually tell me what you think of your game.
This is an interesting situation. This is a good example of like the outcome between Varner and Alicia. The outcome may have been the same, but the tone would have been completely 100%. Different and the outlook. So it's like we can get to the same conclusion, but the way we get there can be completely different.
Yeah.
I've probably seen that a few times.
I always love when someone has a positive outlook on the FTC questions. Like, yes, you're saying what is something you're least proud of in the game, but it's still like you did things in your game. What do you appreciate the most? And then what is something that you might not have liked the best, but you're owning up to it. This wasn't the best thing for my game or for me personally with, you know, some of you guys. And it's a really good question to know really kind of a bit more of the person who you're voting for rather than just gameplay. And having that first juror want to know about the person who they're voting for is rather nice and refreshing.
Yeah, I think Alicia really is a tone setter this season. And I think that's probably why she's better. She's definitely not bitter in
after
this season.
This discussion, I agree, better. All right, moving on into Africa, we have Kelly Goldsmith. Man, is she a firecracker, because this episode is where her vote out episode is the Lex witch hunt of who voted for me, what was this one vote, and he lands on Kelly. She has to go.
Everyone knows that familiar feeling when you just can't answer that one simple question. What's for dinner? Well, thanks to Omaha Steaks, I find myself in that situation way less frequently. Dinner is handled in minutes when I keep my freezer stocked with restaurant-quality protein from Omaha Steaks. And it's not just tender steaks. We're talking flavorful burgers, chicken, seafood, sides, and even desserts, all delivered directly to my door. So whether it's a rushed weeknight evening or a Saturday night cookout, you can have quality protein on hand when you need it. And let me fill you in on a little secret I've been using the past few years. Omaha Steaks proteins aren't just great to have in your own fridge. They also make fantastic gifts. When my dad's birthday comes around, I'll gift him one of the many options of steak packs, and it's an instant win-win. One year I got him the complete cookout collection, which is perfect because he enjoys grilling up everyone a great meal, and I make sure I'm there to celebrate with him, so I get a fantastic steak dinner myself. Win-win. Feel free to use that one. And I want to clarify something for any skeptics out there. Yes, frozen delivery can be this good. Omaha Steaks is known for their meticulous aging process and vacuum-sealed individual packaging. Shipped nationwide and arrives frozen, ready for grilling, searing, and roasting with minimal effort and time. No last-minute runs to the store. They can't match the quality Omaha spent generations perfecting. And if you've never tried them, the Burger Perfection Flight is the perfect introduction. For just $79.99, you get 20 premium steak burgers crafted from 5 distinct cuts of meat. We got filet mignon burgers, New York strip burgers, ribeye burgers, brisket burgers, and sirloin burgers, each with their own different flavor and style. So try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99, plus get $35 off with promo code BEEF. This isn't some rinky-dinky discount. That's $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code BEEF, B-E-E-F, for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details.
In Backtrack by Mark Cameron, the past is prologue for a violent criminal with three names, Ricky Lee Pink. Pink has been rotting in jail for years, plotting revenge against the man who thwarted his almost perfect theft of $5 million in diamonds. That man, Wayne Cutter, is deceased, but his grandson, Arliss, is very much alive, for now. Pink and Cutter are about to collide in a violent confrontation on a floating city in the middle of the water, a massive cruise ship traveling around Alaska's Inside Passage. An experienced U.S. Marshal, Arliss must move fast but cautiously, or he may be the last of the Cutter family tree. As Survivor fans, it's not just the strategy and social dynamics that keep us enthralled. It's also the idea of man versus wild. This concept is at the heart of all Mark Cameron's novels, and it's especially prevalent in Backtrack. It's one of the main reasons I enjoyed this book, and as listeners of The Specialists, I know you will too. If you're an outdoor enthusiast, fan of wilderness thrillers by authors C.J. Box and William Kent Krueger, or just love a fast-paced action thriller from the likes of Brad Thor or Jack Carr, make sure to pick up your copy of Backtrack today. An Alaskan resident and Texas native with nearly 30 years in law enforcement, Cameron is a master of action and gritty detail. He brings explosive authenticity to Backtrack as U.S. Marshal Arliss Cutter's manhunt will employ all his skills and knowledge as a member of the U.S. Marshal Service. Backtrack by Mark Cameron is available now wherever books are sold.
Yeah, this is a very interesting situation. Mm-hmm. Where like it wasn't, as she said, it wasn't her, right? But since you're like coming at me so much, now I am against you. And the person, just think about this here, is that the person that she's probably the most bitter at does not end up making Final Tribal.
Mm-hmm. And she's still bitter.
And she's still bitter at like all of them. Sure. Which, like, fair, I guess they all voted her out. But I think that if Lex had made Final Tribal in this season, things would look a lot even more bitter, right? Like if the tone would be set even more.
So we get a little bit of like a jury speaks segment in the final, right before the final tribal council. And she's like, I don't know what approach I'm going to take, but I want to see them squirm and I'm a sore loser. Hope they're quaking in their Reeboks because I've been sitting here for a really long time and I like to watch things happen. So she's really like looking to dig the knife and twist it in Final Tribal Council. And her question, it's odd that she goes fourth in this situation because I feel like this is either an opener or closer kind of situation. But her final tribal question is, hope the final two were on the jury. But, you know, it could have been worse. Kim, I'm surprised and disappointed at her conduct the last few days. But you know, she did good things too. She gave me something that she's been wanting for a while, which is Lex to take his walk of shame. So she was very happy at the two of them to give her Lex. But at the same time, admires what they've done in the game, and she understands that their success comes at her expense. And then is just like, Ethan, you didn't make a single relationship with me. You didn't talk to me. Like, this is my dilemma. And so she's like, pick a number 1 to 1,000, and proud of you. Like, she goes on this whole long speech about everything, and then it's just like, 1 to 1,000, I'm out.
Kelly is our earliest example of demonstrating why it's important on how you send someone to the jury. Mm-hmm. Because she is bitter. She's so bitter. It's funny because her bitterness isn't directed to the final two at all, despite the fact that, I mean, both of them, like, Kim and Ethan both were pivotal in her vote out, right? They're part of the reason why she goes home there, driven by Lex at that point. But she's stewing there, and she's stewing there for so long, mm-hmm. yet still manages to give the vote to Ethan, who she says doesn't make a single relationship with her in the game. And that's the fascinating thing about it, is this is our first season where we don't have a 4-3 vote. It's a 5-2 win for Ethan. Mm-hmm. And it really does kind of show that this is the point where I think, like, the first juror isn't as impactful as they would be in a different season because of who the final two is.
Hmm.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. You know, something that a lot of people think is that Lex would win if he got to final trial here. Like, that Lex played
the first juror.
And that's the thing.
50.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't think that Kelly votes for him. I mean, it's probably a close vote. Because I think Brandon, Frank vote for Lex, Tom votes for Lex, and then I guess if he's sitting next to Ethan or Kim, it depends. But yeah, Kelly is an interesting juror. We get the 1 to 1,000 now, so now we're really getting out there. And I think Kelly's another one who's contradicting herself a lot here, mm-hmm. where mm-hmm. like you said, Ethan didn't make a single relationship, and yet gives him like a BS question and then votes for him anyway, like as if she had her mind made up already. So I don't know exactly what her thought process here was. I had another thought on Kelly, but I forgot it. So if I think of it, I will.
Yeah, it's like, if you're going to vote someone out, it's really not the best to be like, I'm going to make you swear on everything and then still not believe you. You are a liar. You're like ruffling all these feathers before she goes out and is on the jury voting for you. Even if it's, you know, Lex doing this, Ethan or Kim could have been like, Kelly, I don't know what Lex is going on, blah, blah, blah. And then they could have been like, I tried to like comfort you, but Lex is my alliance right now. So I had to, you know, join in with him on the vote. But I really was, concerned about you or whatever. That's why I went up to you. Having Lex just keep having these conversations with Kelly and then doing nothing about it, as we see via edit, really doesn't help their final tribal council situation.
Yeah, I thought of the thing. Okay, so great. What she says in her jury speech was, you gave me something I wanted for a while. Yeah. And I think that's something to consider when you're making moves, you need to give the jury something that they want to see. Mm-hmm. Sometimes even it may not necessarily be the best thing for your game. In this case, it was voting out Lex was. There could be instances, I can't think of any off the top of my head, but as we go through this series, like mm-hmm. some examples will probably come up, of doing something because it's what the jury wants to see. It's like, oh, I went to the end with these people and did this and this because it was the best for my game. But if the jury doesn't like it, you know, then what did it really get you?
I can think of a couple of examples off the top of my head. You have the way Yule approaches the votes with like Penner in Cook Islands. Mm-hmm. I think is really important in that, or even like
anytime the Chris, someone brings a hat.
Yeah. Yeah. Chris Underwood just like doing what he does in Edge of Extinction, right? Like that's
I guess Tina and everything. Tina with Elizabeth and Roger, which we just talked about, and then the last one.
And yeah, also like giving that, you know, Roger's like, keep Elizabeth longer. And mm-hmm. he does that too. Not only does he do, they give them Jerry and Amber, but also abides by Roger's wishes of keeping Elizabeth longer, even though maybe it might be worse for them. Who knows? But yeah, so like being able to do that, but it's not necessarily this specific move of Lex. Yes, she's been wanting it for a while, but it wasn't a move. It wasn't like Ethan blindsided. Yeah. It was like at the final, you know, 5-7, you know, it came down to the nitty gritty and Lex left.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That I think is really important, right? Where it's just like, okay, you guys like, and I think why she credits that to Kim is because Kim wins that immunity, right?
Mm-hmm. She chooses which boy to keep.
Yeah. So I think that's why she credits her with that decision. I think this is one of those interesting, again, like I think Kelly's a really pivotal juror for the history of Survivor moving forward.
Kim with that move, why does she vote Ethan?
That's what I'm saying about Kelly as a juror. Like, I don't understand.
She actually just went by the number, like the number, right? Didn't she?
Like that's what she says. That is what she says in her voting confessional. So I don't think that Kelly's a great juror. I said that. Yeah. I'll say it again.
We are all saying bitter for Kelly.
Definitely.
She is. And it's just so hard to judge her because, again, like her bitterness isn't directed towards these two at all.
But it's not directed. Like
the problem is, like she lets her bitterness fester to the point where it does impact her as a juror.
Yes.
And ultimately, I think it's probably a good thing that this was a 5-2 win and not a 4-3 win.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
All right. How does Clarence affect this? If he does, I think he goes Ethan, and like it's just a wash. Like I feel like he doesn't. Kelly's still gonna come in hot, but I don't know if he is able to calm her enough to like let all of this not fester inside of her. I don't think he's that like, but he did help Diane in the beginning, so maybe he could help Kelly. I don't know.
Yeah, Clarence, he wasn't like great with Lex either. Like he votes for Lex mm-hmm. when at his vote out. Yeah. So I think that the sentiment, the anti-Lex sentiment, would still be there. Anti-Big Tom sentiment as well. Like
I feel he'd be the same way. In all honesty, I think there would still be a bit of bitterness in Clarence, mm-hmm. not to the extent that there was in Kelly. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was as obvious of betrayal but there was still that resentment, right? Because the Boron boys kind of treated Clarence terribly during the pre-merge.
Yeah. All right. Moving on to Marquesas. We have John Carroll as the first juror here. And as a good amount of these episodes are, it's so focused on John Carroll. And what we forget, or what I forgot, is I feel like John Carroll is the king and founder of honor and integrity. Because while watching his vote out episode, I should have kept a tally on how much he valued honor and integrity. Like, we credit Coach with this, we credit Joe with this, but oh boy, is John Carroll focused on those aspects of the game, and that's what he brings into his jury speaks, into his final tribal final tribal question. So right before the final tribal council, his jury speaks segment is, this is abridged, but these Bible / Book of Mormon thumpers appear. I don't know what they're trying to do. They're lying out the sides of their mouths. Now I have to search within to see which creep I want to give a million to. Like, he is going in because they lied and they didn't have that honor, that integrity. And his question to them at Final Tribal Council, he's the last one, so he's their last final shot before, like, final words and everything like that. Honesty, integrity is important to me. You both lied. Why the hell should I give you my vote? So you know John's kind of foundation points. And you have Nalia, who flips on him. That's not honor and integrity. But Vesepia, like, she didn't do anything bad to you. You were just going to vote her out.
Yeah, I don't look. I know he's probably better. I don't get this because, like, it was the road to four, right? It's called the road to four. It's not the road to seven. It's like, he didn't promise. It's like, what did you promise me? Right. And then Vesepia is just hanging out there. I've said this, I've maintained this for a long time. I've told this to John Carroll. I think that this vote is the most important vote in Survivor history because it showed that the people on the bottom of a majority could flip it and work with the people on the outside. We saw someone like Jerry go home in Australia, but that was Tina's decision, right? Yep. Tina and Colby made that decision and they remained in power, but this was the people on the bottom making that move. So without this, I don't know when we would see that in Survivor history. Having said that, John almost ruins it with his jury question by making it seem like doing something like this is the worst possible thing that you could ever do. So, and like discouraging this type of gameplay. So luckily, this did not influence the generations of Survivor players that came afterwards, but it really set a tone for this season, at least.
It did, but do you feel that John's jury question is more directed at who was in the final two rather than the gameplay of the final two? And
probably
his emphasis on it, honor and integrity, yes, that's the game he was trying to play because he wins that game, right? There's no way John Carroll doesn't win a game that's like straight honor and integrity. And I think
he would win gay honor and integrity, not straight.
You're right. You're right. My bad.
Happy pride, everyone.
But I think like it's the fact that you have Nalia, who is very the Marquesa final tribal council is so heavy on the impact of religion on these two finalists that if I were in John Carroll's shoes, I'd probably be really fed up about them talking about it a lot anyways too, right? Also, pretty sure this final tribal council was recorded twice.
It was. Because it was so bad the first
time. Yeah, it was so bad the first time. So I think there's a bit of agitation there as well, just from how long it's going on and what's happening and the non-responses that were being given throughout the entire final tribal council. So I think we're seeing that come out in John Carroll a bit.
Go, John.
Sorry. It's really funny because he's clearly bitter, but he might be better at the same time. And that's a weird thing to say.
I also think he has that bit of bitterness because he thinks he's better.
Yes.
Because everybody keeps pumping him up the entire season of, I want you to win. You deserve to win. These people are just going to let me win. And then that rug gets pulled out from under him and he's the first member of the jury when he already wrote his check. So I think some of that bitterness comes from people just boosting him up, being hype men for him. And then now his ass is grass and he's on the jury.
This is self-righteousness to a T. I don't want to sound like I'm bashing on John Carroll. There's no hate to John Carroll, but he would have to admit himself that this is just that this is unbelievable. Like the way that, you know, he says they're so happy for me to win and all and all that, you know, they're so it's crazy. And then after the coconut chop, this is obviously the infamous coconut chop. episode where they reveal the hierarchy of the Alliance. So to do all that and then still be upset and surprised when people betray you because they don't want you to win is kind of wild. But yeah,
it is. And I think like a part of it also comes to the fact that as much as John viewed himself as like the forerunner in his Alliance and everything like that, he wasn't necessarily the one running the show the entire time. He kind of came across that way.
Yeah.
But I can't believe I'm saying this on a podcast with McKenna, but Tammy was really doing a lot of the heavy lifting.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, she might not get confessionals, but Camp Life, baby, Tammy's in there. But oh, man, that made my day. I think I'm just going to keep that clip on loop.
Yeah, that you'll see that on Instagram later, everyone.
Oh, yeah. And this is the only place you'll hear that.
Yeah. All right. So the big question, I don't think he actually impacts the winner, but Boston Rob as the first juror. One, that changes his legacy, but I think he still votes for Vesepia. I don't think he's voting for Nalia because Vesepia was kind to him on his vote out.
Beyond that, he was actually close with Vesepia the entire season.
Aside from that, Nalia didn't do anything for him, and I think he would rather be a Vesepia champion for the people coming in. So Vesepia might even have more votes than she got in the actual season, and I think Boston Rob would have kept the same outcome, but maybe the jury might have been a little bit less tumultuous.
Yeah,
maybe, but it's raw. Like, the thing is, it's really hard to evaluate Rob because he's only been on a jury once.
And
we saw that, but that was also 18 years later.
Yeah.
So he's a completely different person at that point. And even the next time we see him, 2 years after this, and he is approaching the game as a game in All Stars, is that how he's approaching it in Marquesas? Like, I don't know.
I think so.
He's using Sarah. He's buddying up with Sean, taking him through as far as he can. Like,
yeah. He's like fear wins the game, right?
Yeah.
He has that confessional. I think he does. It's so interesting because Boss Rob's not good at jury management.
Hunter's
the Hunter, first. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Rob would definitely set a tone. I don't know if the Rotus would listen to him is the thing, you know, and he's not going to listen to them either. So it could just be like a 5-3 vote probably is what it would end up being.
Do you think, going back to John here, do you think John's vote for Vesepia is more of a vote against Nalia than a vote for Vesepia?
I could see that for sure.
I could see that too, because now I think a lot of people, like, Vesepia has kind of become a cult favorite as a player. But I think this final two is actually a lot closer than people either remember or want to give it credit for in terms of how good they are or how good of a game they played on this season. So
I really got to knock Nalia for taking out a mint half.
Yeah, that was bad.
Maybe that cost her the game.
I mean, how old was she on this season? I got the wiki pulled up right here.
24?
Yeah, 21. So yeah, 21. So that's just hard. You know, it's happened, but it's hard. So I don't know. Wait, but this is a
close John bitter point. Or is John better?
With a capital B-I.
Yeah.
Better.
Yeah. Absolutely bitter. But again, like I said earlier, I think it might be better for the game that he was bitter. Yes. Because again, I think this is an evolution of the game, where this goes back to what we were saying about Greg, where it kind of sets the tone for each individual juror matters. And I think like the next season really dictates that. And the next season is like one of the more interesting ones to talk about in this concept. But I think John being bitter is overall better for the game of Survivor.
Yes.
Yeah, makes for good entertainment for sure.
Yeah.
All right, and here's where the views drop, but we are going to Thailand.
I'm out of here.
Yeah, Kyle just leaves. And if you thought Alicia had no content in her boot episode, enter Erin. Okay, Erin Collins is the first juror of Thailand. And what I found really interesting here is Erin is boosting Jake up when he needed a pep talk and was down because they have to vote out. They're going to have to vote out one of their four. And she's like, don't worry about it. Like, it sucks to vote people out that you like, but you need to be strong in your heart and it's going to be okay. And all meanwhile, he's getting all of this information from Erin, who he is then voting out, which is like a little like, that kind of feels icky to me. But I think Erin is just, you know, happy to be here.
Yeah. So this is a really interesting example, a really interesting jury. Yeah. Like you said, Erin gets zero confessionals in her boot episode on a tribe of four people.
Well, is it a tribe of four people?
Yes, it is technically a tribe of four people.
Technically, it's a tribe of four people. But it's such a bizarre situation because this is the fake merge. So they are living with, obviously, this is what you would do when you're on a normal jury, is you're living with the people. But for some reason at this point, they weren't merged. But yeah, Erin has to be one of the most forgettable jurors of all time. That's not a hyperbole.
I honestly thought Ken was the first juror and Erin went before her or before him.
Yeah, because she goes pre-merge technically, which we'll get into a lot of these later on in the, in the series, these pre-merged jurors. But Erin sets an interesting tone in the sense that it's another 4-3 vote. The first three people on the jury all vote for Clay. The last four vote for Brian. And it's a weird split. Yeah, what would you say, John?
I think it's really interesting. I think this is something that Bill and Wes are going to go into tomorrow when they talk about Brian's winning game. Is that's almost intentional by Brian, the way he played the game. Yeah. Brian played the game. Brian didn't play the game to win every single juror. He played it to win enough jurors.
And as long as you don't piss him off. Like, he didn't piss off Erin before she left, kind of thing. Yeah. Well, this was the piss cave episode, so they all pissed
off. Literally pissed.
But he didn't, like, send Erin out on a bad note. He just didn't focus on her.
No, and I don't think I don't think it's a coincidence that, like, these soup guys that go home early on in the jury phase are the ones that vote for Clay. I mean, Clay hasn't had enough time to really rub them the wrong way or anything like that. Brian puts his emphasis on Jake, who he knows is the only one he needs to get the vote for because he knows he's getting the other two Agong votes. Mm-hmm. So I think that's why Erin is such a, I don't want to say it, but like kind of a dud of a Mara Ponderosa, because she has no impact on the game because of the way the game was being played this season.
No, but what I will say, her final words is, she's very happy she played. Her goal was the jury. She didn't predict that it would be tonight, but she came to Thailand with a small bag and is leaving with so much more than she expected. So she is leaving very happy and is not like corrupting anything that anybody who might be coming in. She is just like happy-go-lucky, happy to be here, which, yes, is not necessarily good or bad for a first juror, but like it's good in the sense that she's in a semi-open mind. She's not polluting anything. She's not throwing her influence on anything. And she, with all that, she asks my least favorite final tribal question, which is, why doesn't the person next to you deserve to win $1 million? I love the opposite of, why does the person next to you deserve to win $1 million? Because it shows game awareness of other people's games, not just your own, and you know what's going on. But here you're just belittling the person next to you and why they shouldn't win. So Erin is just like so meh. That's why she's the first question. She doesn't have any impact on the rest of Tribal Council. I'm surprised she wasn't the second one, where like the first one you come out with a bang, the second one is just there, and then, you know, you keep going. But they just threw her first and was like, all right, get this over with.
Yeah, I want to jump in on that because we don't see the speeches in the order they happen, yeah. I don't think, right? Like, we don't know the exact order that these things happen in, but I would imagine we see it the way they want us to see it. So, like, for instance, you said Greg's was, like, second to last, and then you have, like, the Sue Hawk jury speech, right? So it's like, and we'll get to some speeches later on that are later in the Tribal Council, because that's the impact of the story. Right. So in here, Aaron, no impact at all. Right. So we see her first. So the show is telling you what kind of tone the first juror can set or any juror, depending on if they're the last one. But like in this case, Aaron being our first juror had no impact. And that's the show's way of kind of demonstrating that.
Yeah. All right. So with Thailand, we have some special things. So it is a fake merge, but if we were to start the jury with this fake merge where they all arrive on the beach, we have Shein as the first juror. And I think, do we think she goes Brian? Because that's where I think she might be leading too.
There's absolutely no way Shein votes her Clay.
Slammed up for Brian. Like Brian was working on her jury vote. Early on, when they first merge, he goes straight to her and is trying to flip her, trying to get close to her. So, and she didn't like her tribe. Sukjai really didn't treat her very well. So, I think that's a hands down vote for Brian.
It makes it an easier win for Brian, despite the fact that I think Brian has a very easy win in Thailand anyways, because he knows exactly what he's doing. Mm-hmm. It's just easier for him if Shein's also on the jury.
Yeah.
Okay, so Shein's not on the jury, but Aaron is also pre-merge. Get her out of here. Ken. We start with Ken as the first juror, and this just honestly removes one vote for Clay, and Brian wins by a little bit more.
Yeah. And Ken, he's also, he's not a huge, you know, factor or tone setter on this either. I don't think. Doesn't change much.
Ultimately, what it just came down to is like Sukjai did not have a big impact on this season at all.
No, I mean they're with all due respect, they got to be one of the most boring tribes, man. Well, once Rob Go and Shein, but this like this Aaron Boot episode is one of the worst episodes of all time. I felt bad for McKenna. I said, McKenna, I'm sorry you have to watch this episode. My gosh, sorry, my hatred for Thailand is coming out.
All right, so is Aaron bitter or better? Well, she's not necessarily bitter, so better.
But she's not better either. She's like,
what's option three?
What other vowel can we put into these words? Batter? Is she batter?
Basic. Bitter, better, or basic?
Basic.
Oh, yeah. Well,
that's it. She's get on so the new basic. Thumbnail.
I think what it comes down to is this is just a season where the order people went out didn't impact the results of it at all. Mm-hmm. And I think also just like the impact Thailand has on Survivor as a whole. Whereas we were talking about like the impact of these, of Greg as a first juror, as John Caro as a first juror, and how that really resonated throughout the history of Survivor. This is a season that's mostly forgotten by most people unless they really, and like even Survivor super fans only go back to watch it if they want to torture themselves.
Or so, you're one of our good friends, Andrew Denson, ripping through 50 seasons in 50 days.
So, like I said, torture yourself.
he just got through the Dark Ages. Go, Andrew. Yay, you survived.
But I think what it comes down to is it doesn't even matter that Aaron's kind of this nothing burger of a first juror because no one really remembers this season anyways.
This is true. Thailand only is that like memory in Survivor. Nobody's like, oh, remember that thing that happened? Like it's just like always like a Thailand, and I don't even know why anymore because it's been so long since I've seen it, kind of thing. But we have run through our five first jurors. This has been an amazing conversation. So happy to continue this next Wednesday. at 8 p.m. John, we got some things cooking up in the Specialist universe.
It's mostly just the series we've been talking about this entire time. Check out Phil and Once Upon an Island tomorrow as they start their Winning Survivor series. Once again, it's the same type of deal that they did after season 40, where they're going to be looking at, just like us, five seasons at a time, looking at the winners of those seasons and their winning games and how they managed to win. It's really going to be good. It's like kind of a companion series. Like, this is kind of a companion series to that. So you kind of get that 1-2 punch. And it'll be running like the exact same 10 weeks. So it'll be a lot of fun.
Tagwith is also doing a Survivor China rewatch on Mondays or Tuesdays. So stay tuned for that. Otherwise, yeah, this is our summer content for you guys. Make sure to become a patron because they're still cranking out episodes over there. Every Season Matters, Q&A, whatever. A whole lot of things are going on over there. And make sure you like the video, subscribe, and we will see you next week with another episode of Bitter or Better. Goodbye, everyone.